Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Waiting for my song. That doesn't seem to come on, but I can hear that we're on Blog Talk Radio. If it does start, well, I'll just continue and stop for the song. I'm not quite sure where it went to, because we always start the song with "I can see clearly now, the rain is gone." But somehow the song is gone. I know Blog Talk Radio made an announcement. They're having some problems tonight. But welcome, everybody, to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. First, it's nice to be back because I wasn't here last week. Last week I was at our healing weekend, and what a wonderful, wonderful weekend that was. I finally had the opportunity to do something that was really pressing me for so many years now, and that was to meet my co-hostess for tonight, Ms. Suzette Vernon. And I'm going to get Suzette on the phone. Just one moment. Suzette, is that you?
That's me.
Hi, Suzette.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm missing you.
Oh.
It was so wonderful to actually meet you, hold you, kiss you, feel you, see you in person. Someone who I've been in such awe of for so many years last weekend. It was just amazing.
Over a decade, Bonnie, over a decade.
I know, it's been a long time. But finally we got to meet, and it was just so exciting for me, along with the excitement of the whole healing weekend, which was just a wonderful, wonderful experience, as it always is, but this was our best one ever. How did you feel? It was your first one ever. You know, I've had a dozen of them, but how about you? How did you feel about it?
Oh, it was more than what I knew it was going to be great because you were there. I knew that.
Oh, okay.
I knew it was going to be because of you, and that was what I mainly came for, because I was like, you know, Bonnie could not come this close to me and I not go. But then it was so much more. The ladies there were just so wonderful, and the speakers and the venue and just everything. It just I walked away validated in ways that I didn't even know I needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fantastic. It really, really was. I felt like I had been in a healing weekend as well. You know, I got just as much as I received just as much as I gave, and that was so wonderful.
And it's so true that no matter where you are on your journey of healing, these healing weekends are just so inspirational. And of course, I've been out of the healing process for a while, you know, on a personal level. But you know, it always brings me back to how much you've gone through, you know, how much I went through, validates everything I've been through. And some of our women come back not because they haven't healed, but because they have healed and they want to offer support to others, encouragement. You know, everybody there is in a different place on their healing journey. But just validating yourselves with all these women, you know, when you have a few dozen, 28 women there who have all of this experience, who can share their experiences, and you see that it's your life that they're living. Maybe it's in a different location, or maybe it's with a different, you know, religion or culture, but it's all the same emotional impact. And so that you don't feel alone anymore, and that you realize these were things I missed, these are things that other people missed. Nobody could say that I was stupid. you know, we were all blindsided, that we didn't understand what was going on, that we, you know, had to cope, have to forgive ourselves, you know, we have to, like I say, move, you know, be able to forgive ourselves for staying too long or not seeing the red flags that were waving in our face because we just didn't understand them. And I think that's the greatest part for women to sit in a room where nobody has to make any explanations at all, nobody's judging you, and everybody knows exactly what you're feeling. And that's why I think people keep coming back, because they need that validation, they need to feel better. And with Gay Husband Recovery, as I always say, it's a process. It's not something that's going to happen in a day, a week, a month, or a year. And even when you think you're ahead of the game, those that residual scarring, as I like to call it, you know, will pop up again in future relationships, and that's just normal because you've been in an abnormal relationship, so sometimes it's really hard to start trusting again or understanding what normal is, right?
That's true. That's very true. It's funny, I was telling somebody just today that you have triggers that you don't even know you still have until somebody bumps up against them, and a lot of times when you're dating or, you know, you're becoming more intimate, that person's getting closer and closer. And after a while, if you don't really understand what's going on and you haven't done some soul work, you'll be triggered so much that you can't even enjoy the relationship. You know, you can't even allow the natural flow of things because things are being triggered. I mean, all over the place, and you don't even know that they're still there.
I know, and I think that's part of also what Marianne Glynn, who comes on the show, you know, a few times a year, she has her app for post-traumatic stress, you know, Mind Warrior. And that's what she talks about, the triggers, you know, that all of a sudden you think you're doing fine, and then something triggers you and it brings you back, and it is a form of post-traumatic stress. You know, when you have relationships where there was emotional abuse and with sometimes physical abuse, you know, that is where you go to that place where you get, you know, feeling very nervous and you get anxious. You know, it takes its toll on your whole emotional well-being, not only then while you're living it, but for many years after, unless you, you know, work it through with some kind of, you know, counseling, therapy, coaching. You know, so you will have those triggers. And I think that all of us go through that, right?
Yeah, that panic attack. You know, it's literally a panic attack. That you go through, that it's triggered, and it starts out, you can feel it in your body, you know, you get the breathing gets shallow, you get tight in your muscles, you start sweating, you know, it's like your body goes into that fight, flight, freeze thing, it's like somebody just hit the switch, and you try to talk yourself out of it, you might try to talk yourself down, but depending on just how severe it is, you need somebody to help you because you're there. And you cannot hear reason, you cannot hear anything except for that whatever voice that is in your head or whatever that emotion is. That's all, you're engulfed in it. And, you know, I think it can be very startling unless you really understand, you know what, I've learned to function. I can go back to my job. I can raise my children. I know how to add. You know, I know how to subtract. But I'm not all together okay yet. There are layers to this thing that have to be peeled back. You know, there are things that are attached to different parts of me. So it's going to take a while to detach all these different layers and parts. You know, so if you have that understanding of it, it helps us to be more compassionate toward ourselves and actually teach the person who's dating us how to be compassionate toward us, too.
And I think that it's really important to understand that concept, too. The person who's dating us has to have that kind of compassion as well. I just know that if you don't straighten things out, you're going to be very likely to keep repeating your mistakes and picking the wrong partner for yourself. I think that one thing that we both learned from our healing weekend with our wonderful, wonderful women from all over the world and each one is so unique and special in her own way, was that all of us saw something that was off. We didn't trust our intuition. You know, we knew that something wasn't quite right. But you could say that about a lot of people, and I think that's the whole point. A lot of people make decisions, or they get married, or they get into relationships, even though they know in their hearts and in their in their head and in their stomach, that something's not quite right, but their heart is out racing their head and their stomach. Mm-hmm. Their heart's beating loudly, saying, I can fix this, I want it, he loves me, you know, it's going to be wonderful, even if it's not right right now, it'll get better. But I think that when you have all of these, you know, signals that something's not quite right, nothing really ever does get better. Do you think so?
I totally agree with you. It doesn't get better. And I think that's why it's so important to have healing weekends and to take advantage of resources for truth. You're hearing truth while you're calm, because if you eat whatever you eat, it's what's going to come back up. So it's almost like, you know, even as I contemplate what was shared and the depth and all that, I think it's very important to the women who listen to this and who you know, are getting support or who are reaching out, it's important for them to continue to feed themselves the truth, because that's what's going to eventually, that's going to eventually end up rising higher than what happened to them. And it'll be something that they'll be able to tell themselves when they start feeling panic. They'll be able to say, you know what, I'm just panicking. This is going to pass. I'm not going to, or they meet somebody and they feel that urge to rush into a relationship prematurely. They'll be able to say, you know what, this is normal. I haven't had sex or maybe good sex in a while, so I'm a little scarred, so hold on. Let me lower my heart rate. Let me automatically go into some deep breathing exercises that I learned at the end of the retreat. Let me start visualizing. Let me start meditating and slow myself down.
Uh-huh.
You know, or let me contact Bonnie. Let me contact Suzette. Let me contact, you know, Kim. Let me contact, her name was Kathy.
Kathy. Uh-huh.
Yeah, let me contact my sisters. Let me contact my connections so that I know now what's happening. I'm not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe. I know what's happening. Let me get some help. You know what I'm saying? It's giving them options.
I know what you're saying, and I just think it's so hard for women. You know, we've been neglected for so long, and when you're coming out of a marriage that's been a destructive marriage and you've been made to feel so minimized, that when anybody comes along and makes you feel good for the moment, sometimes you just don't want to see beyond that. And I think that's human nature. I'm not just saying it's for straight wives. I'm saying it's for women in general, because by nature, most of us are loving, caring people. You know, women are, you know, looking for love. They're looking to give love. But sometimes they're just looking for love in all the wrong places, as the song goes. And you know, some of the things that I've never quite understood, but maybe you know more because, you know, you're out there with other kinds of women, you know, besides straight wives. But I just never know why some women just feel so attached to going to somebody who's a bad boy or the gangster type or someone who's, you know, edgy, you know, instead of somebody who's just kind and nice who will take care of you. Do you run into that?
Oh, I do, and I used to be one of them. You know,
yeah, me too.
Not so much. I was not so much. Oh, he's a bad boy. Let me go after him. But it's the pseudo swagger. It's like that. The person seems powerful. They, you know, you kind of get really. It's impressive when they can command the room, or when they, you know, can handle things. I know even with Robert, he's a very laid back, great guy, but there's something in me that wakes up when he starts, when I know when I'm walking down the street, if somebody says something off to me, he knows how to grab them in the collar. So, you know, there's that something, I think we associate that with a powerful man. And the thing about it, however, is it's drama. It's, you know, it might be attractive in the beginning, but it's just like a moth to a flame. You know, you have to find out, you know, if he's a bad boy, then that means he's not going to be supportive of me when I disagree with him. When I tell him how I feel, he's not going to be able to really nurture me and make me feel safe emotionally. And that's what a bad boy cannot provide that for you. Or even if he can, if he's a bad boy, he's in an environment, he's used to drama, he's used to things going on, and you're like, I'm not used to this. If it's a bad boy, he's used to a certain degree of testing the waters. What is it when you live by the seat of your pants? He's kind of used to that kind of lifestyle, and you don't want to have to spend your whole life like you're on a roller coaster ride all the time. There's got to be a place where you feel like you can actually relax and rest, and a bad boy can't give you that. So I think after a while, even though we might be attracted to them initially for whatever reason, it's not going to stick and stay, because ultimately we're not built to be in drama all the time. Most of the time, most women, security means so much to us that we cannot abide being in this crazy up and down roller coaster as a lifestyle. It wears on us, and it gets old real fast.
You know, it reminds me, there was a movie many years ago, a musical. I don't know if you saw it, Oliver.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that musical? About
I'm
the little boys
with,
who
I've
are orphans in England. And, you know,
yeah,
they're sitting and robbing people. And it was a really great movie. But there's a song in there that Shaney Wallace, you know, made popular. And it goes, whenever he needs me, I know just where I'll be. You know, here's a guy who's beating her all the time and robbing from her and making her do terrible things. And yet she's so loyal and so wonderful. And, you know, she feels that, you know, it's so validating to her that she can be the woman that he wants her to be. You know, which is so sad, and it kind of reminded me a lot of an article that you just, you know, had printed about codependency, because you have this wonderful article in the E-Zine articles called The New Codependency, The Senseless Attempt to Make Sense Out of Nonsense, which was such a wonderful article. Do you mind if I read it?
Not at all.
Okay, so this was published on April 28th, and it says, his story doesn't add up. His behavior doesn't line up with his words. He won't give her the answer she wants or the disclosure or the closure she needs. It's senseless to try to connect dots that aren't on the page or put together a puzzle with pieces that don't fit. Yet so many women put their lives on hold or stay in relationships longer than they should, trying to make sense out of nonsense. A recovering, sometimes relapsing codependent myself, I can tell you why. The real question can't be answered with a magnifying glass or demanding answers. The real question has nothing to do with him. The real question is about you. Getting answers is about your own absolution. This is the crux of codependency. It is no longer limited to drug and alcohol enabling. It has reinvented itself and is garnering a devout following of articulate, successful, attractive, and smart women who find themselves floundering around in an emotional quicksand. The new codependency is a senseless attempt to make sense out of nonsense. I know I'm a good woman, they say loud and proud to high fives and first bumps and toasts. At first, it feels like they're earning their way out of the nonsense. But when they go home, doubts and fears gnaw at their resolve. You'd think having support would be enough, but not for the codependent. Their quest for absolution can lead them right back to that quicksand, and despite the objections of all around, they jump back in. This is why some women find themselves 10, 20, and 30 years with someone they should have left a long time ago. Sadly, this kept me stuck even post-legal separation and divorce. My inner jury was still out about my worthiness. This is why my ex was able to insinuate himself back into my life. He held the key to my vulnerability, and I never changed the lock. So how did we stop this? How do we stop this senselessness? One of the youngest attendees at an all-women's retreat gave one of the best answers I've ever heard. She said, when the words don't add up, the truth was never in the equation. Put away your magnifying glasses, put away your tools, except that no further assembly is required. These are the words of Wendy Williams. Tell your hypervigilance to take several seats. Secondly, stop this no stop from your finding your own yes. You are responsible for your own happiness and your own closure. No one else. He has to awaken in his own time and his own accord. When you are tempted to figure him out, ask yourself, how can I give myself what I need to be okay? This is the only sense that makes sense. I just love this article, Suzanne.
Oh,
I mean, this,
thank you, Bob.
Your wording is beautiful. I just love this. Maybe you'll allow me to reprint it in my newsletter coming up, because it's really words of inspiration. And guess what? I'm going to give you the credit, Suzette. I won't take it because I love you.
Oh,
if I didn't, maybe I'll. No, I'm only kidding. No, I mean, I just think this is such a beautiful piece. And I think this is it. Like, you know, we feel the sense of codependency, and just when we think, you know, we're angry about it, we get all the help, we get all the support, and we're saying rah, rah, and cheering, and then we go home, and it's back to abnormal, right?
Yeah, we go right back into that quicksand.
Yep, back to the quicksand, or like I call it, back to the abnormal. You know, just
when
you think you're moving ahead, you get, you know, bored back. They have that stick that pulls you back and makes you start questioning yourself and really wondering, is it that bad? Do I have to break up my family for this? How am I ever going to make it on my own? How am I going to survive financially? Who's going to help me with the kids? I mean, it's so easy to fall back into codependent habits. And, you know, it's really sad to me to see how many years women waste in their life, you know, staying in bad relationships because they just don't have the strength to move ahead. I mean, it takes somebody really strong to do it. I never judge. I never give people timelines. I say as long as you're moving ahead in one way or another, mentally first and then physically next, because I know it is a struggle for a lot of people. You know, a lot of times I really admire people who are in abusive types of situations who just can't feel free, you know, who really feel like, you know, there's no way I can ever get out of this, but yet they find that inner strength and that inner resolve to get out. But I think you do need help along the way, right?
Yes, you do. You do. And that's why I think truth is so important, because the more people hear this is not normal, the more people hear men want to have sex, and if they're not having it with you, they're having it with somebody. The more they hear the truth, then all these denial things that we tell ourselves that keep us in relationships too long, after a while they stop losing their grip, because now you've got to deal with truth. Every time you hear truth, you might dismiss it, you might not want to hear it, but the more truth you hear, the more it challenges your denial. And eventually we get out. Eventually it's almost like you get to a point where you can no longer deny what really is. You can no longer give yourself enough excuses or enough reasons. It's no longer worth it anymore. It's almost like, okay, even if this is true, I'm not staying. You know, you just get to the point, I cannot be here another day. I just cannot do it. And it's funny because to the people around, they think it was a knee-jerk decision. I never forget when I decided to leave my ex-husband, one of the things that people asked me was, are you sure? Did you do everything you could to save your marriage? And I'm sitting there like, this has been happening for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just him, the things that he did, but it's been happening for years that more enough things were happening that it was defogging me from denial.
Mm-hmm.
Enough things happened that were motivating me and inspiring me to ask questions, to object to the way I was being treated. You know, different things were happening, whether it was seeing happy couples around me and realizing that mine was not that great, or it could be something as simple as your son saying, "Mom, you're not happy." You know, it can
mm-hmm.
be all these different things where life is trying to get your attention and say, "Wake up, wake up, wake up. You don't need to be here. Wake up, wake up, wake up. Your life is more than this. Wake up, wake up." And so eventually, you know, it'll happen, especially the ladies that came to this retreat. One of the things that I noticed, and I think I said to them, I said, just the mere fact that you did what you had to do to get here was a major first step.
Exactly. The fact that they would come such a distance because, you know, they want to heal, they want to get better, you know, it's truly amazing. I did want to mention also, Suzette, that I'd like to get a little input from you on this. I read this really great article. If anybody would like a copy of it, you know, feel free to write to me. But this is about why women stay with controlling men, because a lot of the men that we're with are controlling, correct?
Oh, yes. We've all figured out that all of our husbands read from the same narcissistic book.
Yeah, exactly, and Book of Control. Well, that's because
yes.
they're not control. You know, because when you have to control, you know, a lie that you're living, you have to become controlling. But that's how it is when you're a gay married man. That's not for gay men. Gay men are not like that, but the ones who get married, they're a different
right.
breed. But this says 8 bad reasons people stay in painful relationships. It says, 1, because being someone's everything is intoxicating stuff, at least at first. When you met,
mm-hmm.
he only had eyes for you. He called to say good morning. He called to say I love you at lunch. He wanted to be the last voice you heard before you went to sleep. When you left work or your last class for the day, he was there waiting for you. If another guy ever even looked at you, he put his arm protectively around you. If a guy friend
mm-hmm.
called you up, he pouted. He wanted all of your attention. In exchange, he gave you attention as no one ever had before. He wined you and dined you, or at least took you out for pizza and a beer several times a week, and made you feel like a princess. Sounds like any romantic beginning, doesn't it? If your guy
mm-hmm.
is so insecure that he needs control, his attention gradually becomes claustrophobic. Over time, his demands for all your attention, all of your time, hemmed you in. You found yourself frantically explaining that your every move didn't involve him. Staying a bit late for work, a girl's night out, even a visit to your mother on a Saturday morning became grounds for a fight. What started out as wonderful attention became not so wonderful control. So that was the first point, that, you know,
mm-hmm.
he's everything to you at first. Next, she says,
mm-hmm.
because these guys can be absolutely charming. You didn't fall
mm-hmm.
in love with your boyfriend for no good reason. He can be charming. He can be romantic. He can say things that every woman would like to hear. Sometimes he likes you to see a sweet vulnerability that melts your heart. He seems to feel genuinely terrible after the two of you have a big fight. Okay, he brings apologies and flowers. He promises he'll be less jealous. He says you really are his everything. Love making at times like this is delicious. He says all the right things to you to make you want to give him another chance. Things are wonderful for a while, but then it starts all over again. You come home a little late and his eyes look stormy. You make a phone call and he has to know just who you're talking to. Pretty soon you're feeling hemmed in again and you know that there's going to be another blowout. Reason
mm-hmm.
3 is because you don't feel you deserve any better. Maybe you grew
mm-hmm.
up in a family where you were told that you were no good, ugly, clumsy, or incompetent. Maybe your father and mother even told you no one will ever love you. Perhaps you were an ugly duckling in high school who never had a date, or you were never accepted by the people you wished were your friends. Maybe you've had a series of disastrous relationships or no relationships at all. Your self-esteem is in the cellar. even though a part of you knows that your family should have treated you better, even though you understand that high school is harsh for a lot of people, there's even a bigger part of you that feels that maybe all the people who rejected you were right. You really are a loser. You've become convinced you should be grateful for any smidgen of caring your boyfriend provides, even if it's painful. Reason number four is because you don't know any better. All the women you grew up with are in abusive, difficult relationships. All your girlfriends complain about men who won't do their share of, you know, do their share and who stopped being Mr. Wonderful long ago. Lacking role models for positive, loving relationships, you think good relationships only happen in the movies. Although you can agree in theory that women deserve to be treated with consideration and respect by the men who love them, you've never seen such a relationship up close and personal. Number five is because he scares you or manipulates you. There are men who aren't a bit subtle about their need for control. Try to leave and they threaten to hurt you or your kids or other people you care about. He may even have grabbed you too hard or hit you or locked you in a room or waved a gun around. When he goes into a rage, there's no telling what he might do. So you do everything you can to prevent it, including staying. The manipulators are equally effective in trapping their women. They say they will commit suicide if you leave, and it will be all your fault. They are masters at making you feel guilty even when you don't have a clue what you're guilty for. Fights inevitably shift to all the things you've done wrong, or at least wronger than him. You end up staying to make amends and to make it right because you can't bear the idea of living with the guilt that he hurts himself. Number six is you can truly believe you can change him. Because the relationship started out so wonderfully and because he can be so terrific after a fight, you hold on to the idea that you can bring out the best in him. All you have to do is find the right words and behave in the right way, and he'll have the man of your dreams. Love conquers all, right? Wrong. No one can make another person be anything. He has to want it. He has to be willing to work on it. He has to want to change because it will make him a better person, not because he made an insincere promise, in order to make up after a fight. Even though you know all of this, you convince yourself that you're an exception. You're going to find the way. Number seven is because you're more afraid of being alone again than of being in a painful relationship. You've been alone and it's lonely. You want someone to talk to in the evening, to cuddle up to at night. At least once in a while, take the kids. Even picking up his laundry, cooking meals he doesn't appreciate, and fighting with him is more appealing than coming home to an empty house. If he does pay the bills and does a few chores, and especially if he pays most of the bills and could be counted on to do some of the heavy work, it's even harder to think about going it alone. Supporting a family is doing everything to maintain a household as a single person is really, really hard. Maintaining the fiction that you have a partner feels better than dealing with the reality of going it alone. And the last reason, number eight, is because you love him. The most common answer I get when I ask women why they stay in bad relationships is, because I love him.
Love
isn't always rational, it's true. There's no accounting for chemistry. But the fact is that love, especially one-sided love, isn't enough to sustain a relationship. It's a one-hand clapping. So it says, if you are always in on the giving end of the relationship, if you've accepted indifference, abuse, and manipulation because you don't believe you deserve and could get any better, it's time to take charge of your life and make some changes. I really love this. Isn't this great?
It's great.
This is written about. This is written by Marie Hartwell Walker, and it says that Dr. Walker is a licensed psychologist, marriage, and family counselor. But I think she hit every single thing that we've been talking about, right?
She has. She has. The whole time I was listening to it, I was like, "Yep, codependent." Because the thing about it is, codependent means to be dependent with. So the longer you're with these men, it is definitely a codependent relationship, because the longer we're with them, the more lack of confidence we have about leaving them, whether it's our self-esteem, whether it's our economy, whether it's our parenting of our children. It's like the longer we leave, the more of ourselves we lose. And then after a while, it becomes a codependent thing where he's acting like a a fool, and you need him to act like that because there's something inside of you that does not know for sure how worthy you are. So there's this little dance that you two are doing that, you know, he falls apart, you enable him because you need, you feel like if you fix him, he'll be so grateful, maybe he'll change, you know, all these different things. It's codependency, and that's not love. You know, we tell ourselves that because that, those are the images that we grew up with, and like she said, you ask people, why do you do it? I love him. But, Bonnie, I have to disagree with that love thing. I think it's more of a need. It's more of a compulsion. It's more codependency, that desperate, crazy, I can't, oh, my God, dramatic. That's not love.
I know, but you know what, Suzette? What, I think that takes time to figure out that's not love. I know that one point that this article made that was really true for me when I was married to my, you know, ex-husband was that when she says that sometimes they do this vulnerable thing to make you, you know, feel sorry for them, that how vulnerable they are. So in your heart, you're feeling, oh, my God, there really is a good side of him. And, you know, he just had some bad breaks and he had a bad family life. And that's why he's feeling like this. And then he'll cry a little bit and you feel so bad. And you say, this is a man who I really fell in love with, because it takes you back to when he was doing that romantic stuff with you before you were too involved. And that's what you did fall in love with. You fell in love with some kind of image that was a presentation that he was putting on for you, because these guys know how to get you. They know that once you fall for them, then they don't have to be nice anymore. They already have you where they want you. And you fell for some guy, and just because he's disappeared doesn't mean that you didn't fall for that original guy, and you keep thinking if you make him happy, if you do the right things, he's going to come back. And I think that's one of the problems.
That is exactly that. That's the dysfunction. Because a healthy person might give him one more chance.
Right.
But tears or not, it's not going to be a thing where over and over and over. It's this little cycle. Like I said, it's that dance. Over and over. You can almost script it. I'm going to come into the house. He's going to be sulking because I'm late. I'm going to go over and do this. You know, after a while, you can tell your girlfriends exactly how he's going to act, exactly what he's going to do. And that's codependent. You know, I understand, you know, but that's the difference. That's why we have to tell ourselves that there is something dysfunctional, something off that this person is triggering, because they didn't just force us into enabling them. They tapped into a pain. They tapped into a something in our wiring, in our programming, the way we, things were modeled for us, or things were told to us, or the things we, the stories we created around things. They tapped into it, but they're not the cause of it. And I think sometimes we also stay too long, or we get caught up in codependency because we're making it about them without taking a step back and saying, wait a minute, I'm not healthy. Because a healthy person would not put up with this. A healthy person would not give this person all these many chances. A healthy person would not do this. The first time he raised his voice, she'd be out. The first time he raised his hand, it's if he was going to hit her. The first time he bullied her, the first time he made her feel unsafe, she was not going to stay around to see if he would do it again. Tears be darned. She's not going to put up with it. She's just not. And so I think it's really important, and I'm so glad for this radio show and so glad for all these resources for people are being honest about where they have been so that other ladies can say, oh, okay, they're giving a language to what I'm going through. They're telling it line upon line. They've been through the very same thing I've been through, and they're telling us, this is not normal. This is not good. Get out.
And I think that, you know, that's so hard for some women to hear. You know, like, one of the things also I wanted to bring up, I have a guest coming on in a couple of weeks, so I just love Dr. Margalis Felstead. And she wrote a really great book called Stop Caretaking the Narcissist Borderline Personality. And she has a newsletter she sends out every month. If anybody'd like to be on her list, you know, just let me know and I'll give you her information. But she's talking about now's the time of spring. It's time for renewal, spring cleaning, as she likes to call it. Before you can bring in the new, you have to clean out the old or you will have a complicated mess on your hands. Spring has traditionally been the time to get the dust out, clean the windows so you can see more clearly, and also reevaluate your priorities, your goals, and decisions. Spring is a time of change and hope and new adventures. But she says, letting go with love. Sometimes it is very hard to tell when you need to let go of something or someone in your life. Caretakers generally tend to hang on to things, fix things, hope things will get better. I'm not sure if that's because the things being hung on to are truly valuable or fixable or even useful anymore. I wonder, in fact, if caretakers hang on because change is so difficult. And maybe you also believe that if you let something go, it means that it was a wrong choice or a mistake in the first place. Everything changes as time goes by, including our needs and feelings. The favorite outfit that you wore 5 years ago just doesn't appeal anymore. The perfect house you bought when the kids were in high school was so wonderfully filled with their activities, now echoes memories and feels lonely. The job you dove into with vigor 10 years ago now feels like drudgery. These were good choices, not mistakes, because at the time they brought you joy and satisfaction. What has changed in your life over the last 10 years? Scientists say that every cell in our bodies is replaced every 7 years. I've also read that researchers say everything we own is slowly replaced over a span of every 10 years. You might want to look around your home and see if that's true for you. As you look around, also think about the things that you know are older than that. Are these things serving your needs? If not, why are you hanging on to them? And she said, you know, one of the things that reasons why people hang on to things is the feeling of guilt or the obligation to fall into somebody else's value. So these feelings of guilt, obligation, and fear can also keep you from making changes in your job, where you live, or even in your friendships and other relationships. Take some time to reflect on what and who your life brings to you. Fulfillment, satisfaction, and energy, and who pulls your energy down, makes you feel bad about yourself, or brings feelings of guilt and resentment. You have a choice about what you keep in your life and what you let go. And I think that's really true, right?
You have a choice, because of when you were talking about it being hard, and I remember something I heard somebody say, and I truly believe it. They said, why should something being hard be enough reason to stay in it? I mean, it's like, yeah, it's going to be hard. Of course it's going to be hard, but when has something being hard been enough reason to not do it just because it's hard? I mean, I think all of us could all point to something that we've done that was hard. It's hard to go to college. It's hard to raise children as a single parent and go to college. It's hard. It's hard. There are different aspects of life that are hard, but yet we do it anyway. Why should getting out of a bad marriage be any different? So what is hard? So what? I mean, that's not a good enough reason to stay. Well, it's hard. No, that's not good. That's not a good enough reason. That's not a good enough reason.
No, and I think that marriage is different than going to school, because going to school is hard, like you said, but, you know, at least there's an end to it. You know, so you sacrifice for a few years. You know, you work really hard because you know you have to meet a goal that you're trying to meet. But with marriage isn't supposed to be that hard. I'm really sorry for people who think it should be. Marriage is supposed to be a relationship of joy. And that's not to say there won't problems, or you could have arguments. I mean, that's normal because people are people, but not basic foundations that are cracking all the time. You know, when there's always a crack in the foundation and you can never quite patch it up, or for those women, you know, who claim they're walking on eggshells because, you know, it just takes, you know, one shell to crash and, you know, everything falls apart. You know, this is not hard work. This is living wrong. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes, and what I was talking about being hard is people staying in relationships that are not fulfilling. because I agree with you. It shouldn't be that hard. It really should not be that hard. A relationship of love and mutual respect should not be that hard. Like you were saying, even at the retreat, if you've got to medicate yourself to stay in it, you don't need to be in it.
I know, that upsets me so bad. I just can't even get into how upset it makes me when women have to dull their minds with medication to stay in a destructive relationship. I mean, that makes no sense at all to me. You know, it just shows me that you're throwing away your life. You know, I'm a really funny person. I'm not religious. I'm not really spiritual. But I do believe in the value of life and the quality of life for people. Because I believe you have one life to live. You're given a gift.
Just one.
And what you
just
do with
one.
The gift is up to you. You can either take the gift and, you know, multiply it and have lots more gifts, or you can smash it on the floor and have nothing. But, you know, I feel that it is a gift and that we were put on this earth to be happy, to be fulfilled. You know, you're given this chance at life. Why are you not taking it? Why are you allowing somebody to ruin it for you?
Ruin it. And
right?
It's like, because I remember hearing one of my friends, her husband, as far as I know, wasn't gay, but they ended up having some struggles. And I remember one of the things she said, he took my youth from me. He took my youth from me. And it's like, you know, like you were saying, we only have, as far as we know, one life. Because nobody's come back to tell me that they were on life number two. You know, so as far as I know, there's one. And it's sad to have spent your life struggling at life.
Life has a lot of obstacles, but, right, I mean, look, everybody has problems, everybody has bumps on their journey, but you can't fall into, like you call it, the quicksand where you can't get yourself out of it because somebody keeps pushing you down in it. Even when you're grabbing for a lifeline and somebody's trying to pull you out, if somebody else is keep pushing you back in, then, you know, there serves no purpose. And I know that it is hard. I know we become codependent on men who scare us, who frighten us, who make us feel inadequate, who tell us nobody will ever love you again. And so many of us went unloved for so long that thought just rings in our head. I know I used to hear it. Nobody will ever love you again the way I love you. But as I said at our conference last week, that to me, love just became another four-letter word. Like LOVEFUCKSHIT. It could have been any four-letter. It could have been any four-letter word. You know, love is supposed to be like Janine Finelli always says. You know, like our health coach here. You know, she has it printed on her hands. Love is kind. That's what love is about. Kindness. It's about respect. It's about, you know, showing compassion. About making you feel good every day you wake up. That somebody's there to say, I love you, and in a loving and kind way. And people can talk all they want that this is only in the movies, but you and I know as a fact it's not.
This is real life for us, right? It's real life. I was telling a girlfriend of mine that earlier today, I said, you know what? I'd gone through so much with my ex-husband because I was very pessimistic. When people said they were happy, I would be like sucking my teeth saying, right. You know, they can't do all this. You know, like, really. After a while, you get very pessimistic and almost angry with them. But I'm like, my God, I was telling my husband the other day, I said, oh, my God, we're the couple that people probably want to stick their finger down their throat and go, like, gag. I was like, we have become that couple because love is really real. It's so real, and I feel so protected, and I feel so good about being myself, and I feel so alive. And I was telling my girlfriend, I said, every single day I'm loved. I said, I abide in a state of love. I live in an environment of love 24/7. It's not like I go into it and I leave it and I go back. I'm under a love umbrella. I live in a love tent. I wear a love blanket. I said, and it makes a difference. It makes a difference, and it is possible, no matter what people have gone through in their lives. And, Bonnie, you know you've gone through your stuff, and I've gone through mine, and if statistics were right, we should not be having a man. We would be in too much bad shape for a man to love us, or even for us to let one love us without us, you know, going into convulsions in a corner somewhere. But it's so true. It takes an open heart and a willing spirit, and it takes a fight. And I don't mean necessarily the kind of fight I felt like doing, like, you know, Duke syrup, take off my ear when it's so hard. But I mean that fight to take a step, that fight that says, I might can't leave right now, but I'm going to keep eating truth. I'm going to keep eating truth. I'm going to go to places where I'm going to be built up and restored. I might go get a makeover done at the makeup counter just because I'm trying to create a different energy so that I can get enough to pull myself out little by little. It might start with my coloring my hair. It may start with me going to the makeup counter. It may start with me reading a book. You know, it may start with me going ballroom dancing, but different things that we do to fight for ourselves. And I think in some way we had to find our way of fighting our way through it enough that when the guy threw his hand out, we could grab it. You know, there has to be something. And I think even if people say, well, I don't have self-esteem, that if you want to fight for yourself, you'll grab whatever comes at you that might would build it. Listening to this radio show, you know, it's
and even if you don't have high self-esteem, you still shouldn't have to want to feel that you need somebody to make you feel miserable to feel good. You know, the fact that you're living with someone, if it's making you feel good, that someone's making you feel miserable because it's better than nothing, wrong. Take nothing.
Wrong.
If that's your choice,
take nothing,
and it's better than minus. You know, a zero is better than a minus number, right?
Exactly.
You'd rather have nothing than to have all these negative forces keeping you down, because there is no way. Like I told the women last week, as long as you're living in a situation and you're still with your, you know, gay husband, because sometimes you just can't walk away that minute. Obviously, you know, it takes time and planning. But, you know, your mind has to be in the right place to start your feet moving. But the point is right? But
that's
even
right.
If you're, like,
if
in that kind of a situation.
Right. Keep coming back.
Exactly.
Yes.
But at least, you know, if your head's in the right place, and then eventually, you know, your heart already knows what it has to do, and then your feet will start moving. And hopefully you won't be staying there. But to just, you know, you can't begin your healing process or your grieving process and your healing process until you are out, until he's gone.
Yeah.
You cannot possibly live in that same house and be reminded on a daily basis and say, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to grieve now. No, you're not. You're just existing
now.
You can't start grieving until he's gone. Then you can
grieve,
and then you can heal until you finish grieving. So it's all a process. But step one is to realize that I need to get out. I need to make a plan.
Yeah.
And that's why you have a coach like Suzette. Suzette is a professional life coach. And isn't that part of what you do, help people make a plan?
Oh, God knows I'll help you make a plan. I call it escape. You got to plan your escape. You got to plan your escape. I don't know. Yes, I don't know if people have seen Shawshank Redemption, but to me that typifies that man's diligence to escape that situation. I have never seen it quite that way before. And I said to myself, if he could dig himself out with a spoon all those years while everybody else is asleep, he has one silver spoon that he is digging behind this picture that's hanging in his cell. He is digging all night while everybody else is sleeping. He is digging his way out. Now, he might be sodomized the next day by a gang of guys. He might be used by the warders, the political system. They're telling him they're going to help him out, but using him because he's good at finances and bookkeeping. he went through all this stuff, seeing other inmates kill themselves, hang themselves. He went through all this, and he was an innocent man. But instead of sitting there and feeling sorry for himself, what did that man do? And you find out at the end of the movie, he dug himself out and planned an escape route, swimming through sewer water to get out. And even told one of his best friends in prison, when I get out, I want you to meet me under a certain tree. And the guy was like, yeah, sure. But just as sure, he ended up digging his way out. He took into consideration the guards, the dogs, everything, the barbed wire fences. That man took stock of everything and found a way out. And I am one of those kind of people that I will diligently help my clients find their way out.
Mm-hmm. And it may take, you know, time. It may be short. It may be long. But that's what a coach does. A coach helps you make the plan and go through the steps on each step you're going to have to make on your escape route. And just having that support and having a cheerleader, because a coach is a cheerleader for you, and knowing that even if you fall back a step, you can get up and move forward again. That coach is there to, you know, guide you along the way, give you a little push once in a while, and be there for you to comfort you when things just don't go right. And that's what Suzette, our ultimate supreme coach in our system, does. And Suzette, we're going to try to tell people how they can find you. But first of all, you can always go to my website at gayhusbands.com, and under my references, find Suzette's name right there. But if you have a pencil, you can go to Suzette's website. Go ahead, Suzette.
Okay, it's www.suzettevernon.com, and that's SUZ as in zebra. ETTE, B as in victory, ERNON.com. That's me.
Oh, my God. That is you.
That's
but, me. But once again, if you have any doubts, just write to me, and I will send you the direct link. I'm just checking one thing out for you, Suzette. Hold on 1 second. I want to see if this name is taken. Coach Suzette.
That's right. You've been trying to give me Coach Suzette forever.
Yeah. Oh, well. You waited too long. Now it's not available.
Oh, man.
But CoachSuzette.org is available.
It is?
How's that? Uh-huh. And Coach Suzette Life. You know, well, life is available. Yep, there's a lot of Coach Suzettes that are available. So start looking for them so I can announce it easier. But,
yes, ma'am.
You know, won't it be much easier for people to find you? How about under Super Suzette? How about SuperSuzette.com? They don't get any more super than you are, Suzette, right?
Oh, honey, people are going to think, oh, God, she is full of herself now.
All right, how about Super Coach Suzette? We'll find
and
something,
like,
guys,
my,
hopefully by the time we get back here
clothes.
Again. But in the meantime, Suzette, thank you. Lots of love to you.
Thank you too,
for
Bonnie.
Really, you know, making my day, making my week, making my months and years. You're the best, and you always inspire me. And hopefully I'll see you again before. In the future year or so, okay? So to all of our ladies, we want to say thank you for listening. A special hello to my dear friend Scott, who's always listening to you and me. Scott's a wonderful man who really has a lot of sensitivity to what we're doing. Thank you, Scott. Love to Jen, who's in her recovery in Houston. Doing great, Jen, every day making such progress. And to all of our healing sisters or those who need to heal, you can always write to me at bonk@aol.com. And love to you all. And I love you, Suzette.
I love you, Bonnie.
And I'll look forward to talking to you next month.
All right.
And I think we'll go out with a really great song by the Beatles called Blackbird. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Blackbird. in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night.